You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
All right, welcome to the Beer Tour Guy Show, episode 22. I'm your host, Steve Johnson of Motor City Brew Tours. And today, on this beautiful sunny day in April, I got am I going with Team J&J? I can't decide if I like that or not.
That's
I got Joe and Jeff Powers of Homegrown Brewing Company in Oxford, Michigan. Why don't you boys introduce yourselves and we'll kick off the show.
I'm Jeff Powers, the general manager slash many things. And this is my brother, Joe.
My name's Joe, as he just said.
He does that beer
amazing.
Thing.
Amazing.
Beer
thing. Amazing.
Yeah, and, I make the beer.
Yeah. So. And you make the beer. Yeah. It kind of looks that way, too, because you got the kick-ass beard coming in here. You got a flannel on.
Yeah, it's all part of the uniform.
You're totally chill. Yeah. You know, your brother, he's amped. He's ready to rock. Yeah. Clearly, he's the voice, right?
There you go.
That's usually how I see it. Yeah, it's fun when I got a family operation to deal with, and I don't always see it where it's divided so cool. With multiple people.
Yeah.
It's almost like I had to review my notes to remind myself of all the people I met and talked to on the 3-4 times I've been out to your brewery now. I think it's been 3 or 4. Let's see, I did a beer history talk maybe a year and a half ago with my book, and then I did that a second time with a historical group.
Sure.
And then I brought a tour group out, what was that, December?
Yeah, it was first week of December.
Yeah, yep. First week of December. Man, a lot of fun.
Group. Yeah, it was a good group.
It was a rowdy. Yeah. That's how you know it's like getting close to Christmas and holidays, because usually your group on that, they're ready. They want to drink. They want to like buy stuff. They want to ask a lot of questions.
Sure.
Fun stuff. But okay, so we're going to kind of jump all around, but I always like to start with kind of a little bit about your backgrounds and diving into getting a brewery started and the family affair aspect. And so you guys can kind of go back and forth, and I'll just try to make sure that you get to talk, Joe. How about that? Is that fair?
That's fair. We'll do a 5-minute limit on my monologue. So
is that it? Is that what we're going to go with? A 5-minute? I'm going to watch the clock.
Yeah, you know, it's an hour. So yeah. But to touch on what you said, the family aspect of things, you're seeing a lot of that. It's kind of a typical story of hey, family who loves to brew opens up a brewery, and we are lucky enough to be a Swiss Army knife of talents, and we do function pretty well. So we made it through year two, and it's very good having 2 years under your belt and looking back on, you know, you were talking about starting a brewery, and I think everybody, you know, it's not a one size fits all thing. There's no book out there on how to open up a tap room or a restaurant or a brewery, anything like that. So it's been, 2 great years, and we're happy to see growth. We're happy to, you know, expand our draft list, get into a little bit of canning, and take baby steps. Yeah, we want to slow grow for sure. We don't want to bite off too much. So,
from a brewing perspective, Joe, how do you feel after 2 years of brewing commercially?
Yeah, it's been an experience for sure. I like where we're at. The first year was definitely sort of a learning experience for my dad and I. We both do the brewing.
So your dad homebrewed for a lot of years, and then or was it? How did that start? I'm trying to remember what I read on kind of the original press release articles.
Yeah. Well, I started homebrewing probably about 15, 16 years ago.
And you got your dad into it?
I taught him.
And you taught him. Okay. Yeah, I'm sure that's not what he was saying when I was talking to him last. But that is the deal. That's what I thought so.
Yeah, the Skywalker days. Yeah.
He definitely took off with it. And it is sort of his initiative to get the professional thing going. But scaling up from homebrewing to professional brewing has been that, like I said, that first year was a good learning experience, but I like where we're at now.
What was the kind of, what was the homebrew setup you had before? Kind of what was a typical, how big of a system were you?
Yeah,
brewing
just,
with?
You know, 5 gallons.
So a simple 5 gallon, like most folks would do. And then at homegrown, your 5 barrel?
5 barrel, yeah.
5 barrel.
Double 2.5 system. So it's a interesting setup we got. It's a Psycho Brew.
Right.
Custom made our system. So we're doing
so Michigan's own Psycho Brew.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We try to shop as local as possible. But it's a cool setup. Double 2.5 barrel system. It's on casters. They custom made it for us. So it's kind of interesting to see a brew day because our bar actually disassembles and it's like a transformer. It rolls out and we're able to, you know, utilize the space a little bit better.
I always find that interesting. I've been in other breweries that do things like that. And I don't think the general public, if they were, unless they were in there or you showed them that, would get that.
Yeah, people are always surprised to see that. We started this thing called Hot Dog Monday. It's where we give the kitchen a day off and we sell beer and hot dogs. But that's often you'll come in and they'll actually be in mid-brew process. And people are like, whoa, you know, the beer, you know, what happened to your bar? It fell apart. Yeah, and it's like, yeah. No, it's just a messy brew day. But it's cool to have that. And when we designed it, see a lot of breweries do that. But you put a lot of money into these tanks and they're cool looking. You want to show them off. Not only that, kind of encourages the educational aspect with your customers. People are always asking, what's that? What's that? So it's a really cool kind of as close to the product as you can be. So
is it more cost effective to buy a system that way and 2.5 barrels? So you're basically, if you're trying to brew one, you're brewing two batches to get into one fermenter.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a space thing for one, but also like a flexibility thing. So it's pretty easy for us to brew a half a batch of beer.
Okay, yeah,
so we
that's
don't
true.
Have to do the whole 5 barrels if we don't want to. We can do a pilot batch or a seasonal or whatever that we want to do.
A lot of breweries would have a bigger system and they would need a secondary, smaller test batch system.
Yeah,
right?
Or we can do a double mash and do double mash right into one boil pot and do a really strong beer. That's how we do a lot of our big beers that way. So
okay,
just gives us some flexibility.
I like that. That's smart. I think nowadays having that kind of flexibility must be key in the market where the average bar could have 40 taps, right? Where that wasn't always the case, you know? So now you guys
sounds like a nightmare.
Going into the market. Oh, totally, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. But you guys coming in the market are like, okay, well, we see where all these places with options are, we need to make sure we have options. So besides beer, you guys have cider, wine.
Cider and wine. And I think, you know, that was kind of always our approach is to start small, scale up. You know, the beer industry is definitely changing. You see a lot of breweries go in and go out, and I think a lot of them – you know, reach and try to grow too fast. We want to, you know, kind of be slow with it, gentle with it, make sure our product is always, you know, the top quality, not go after distro too early. Make sure that we have, like I said, a gradual game plan to scale.
It's almost like you listened to my show last month. Do you know who I had on last month?
No, no.
I had on Evan from Baffin Brewing Company.
Actually, I did listen to the first.
That's almost exactly what he said.
Yeah,
and I was like, then I'll probably say like the same thing I said then, which was, wow, I love hearing that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Because there was a time period where I'd meet new brewers and everything was like, I make the best beer in the world and I'm going to start selling it across the whole world. You know, I'm like, listen, let's get back down to reality.
Sure,
okay. And
sure.
There's thousands of you now.
Yep, absolutely.
And let's be honest, you know, like, why don't you do your market really good? Why don't you do your community really good? Yep. Right.
And that's one thing, you know, that we get asked in, you know, interviews, what makes you special? What sets you apart? And it's a really hard thing to nail down when there's what, like 300 just in Michigan,
several
in progress. And it's like, we're almost moving back to, you know, what we always wanted to do was be a brick and mortar location. Obviously, distro is something we'd love to get into, but that's not even, you know, on our 5-year horizon. I think big scale anyway. We self distro, but it's going back to like pre-prohibition days where, hey, if you had a populace there was a brewery there, almost like a hardware store. It was
right,
like
the town of Oxford exists, and there isn't another brewery there, and there was a need, obviously a thirst.
Yep.
Of people locally.
There was one way back in the day, pre-prohibition. When we first signed up, the city gave me this history of Oxford. And it used to have Oxford Flakes. It had its own cereal company. It had its own.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to go look up some of that stuff later. Okay.
Yeah, and everything seemed to burn down. It was kind of a scary DVD. You're like, and then it burned down. And then it burned. So
that's almost always the story, isn't it?
What's your 5-year plan? Don't burn down.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want to do that.
But pretty much anything industrialized, you always hear that. Even the I do a lot of auto history research as part of my bike tours, and that's always the story, right? Like, they had a plant here originally, then it burned down, then they moved here, they built it a little stronger, and that lasted like 2 more years, and then it burned down.
Yeah, it's dark story for these,
these
old towns.
It scares me, right? Like, if you didn't die in like a fire in the 1800s, then I guess you weren't working too hard, right?
You weren't
basically
doing it right. Yeah, for sure.
Nowadays, we don't worry about those things quite as much, thankfully, right?
Yep.
And we can get back to reality. Wow. So what are we drinking here, Joe?
What do we got? Okay. The red chair, right?
Well, you still got the Polyann wit beer. So
you're looking at me like I'm drinking slow, huh?
We've moved on already.
Yeah, you have moved on. Okay.
Yeah,
this is
so
good.
It's a Belgian wit beer. It's got a local honey in it. and you know, some coriander and orange.
Why is it called Polyann? I'm asking a question.
Polyann Trail. It's a bike trail that runs right by there, and we've tried to tap into that weird connection between cyclists and craft beer.
I know a little bit about that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they like to burn calories and get them in a good way quickly. So yeah, that was kind of something. Polyann Trail. It's on Oxford thing.
I like it. It's a very easy drinking beer.
Sure.
And I like that trail. I wish I had a chance to ride it a little more often. Now that I'm kind of down here in Berkeley, I don't get a chance to do that too often. But
sure.
You guys have a bike riding group, right? That
yeah,
does
Main
come
Street
in
Cyclists.
There.
I'll give them the shout out. They're right there in Lake Orion. They come out every Tuesday. They'll start in our parking lot. They actually started last night at about 15 people show up. They'll start and finish at our place, and they're coming in and eating and drinking. So, and you see, you know, with Bells and Shorts, I know they sponsor all the races, and there's a definite coincidence between cyclists and craft beer.
Yep,
and
we like to be bike friendly.
Yes,
the trail is only about a block from our place.
Yep.
And,
yeah, the first time I came out, it hit me. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. The Polyann Trail is basically right here. That's pretty cool. All the breweries that have kind of figured that out do well. Where I'm doing a talk at tonight at Rochester Mills Beer Company, they have a bike club that I was a member of for a lot of years when I still lived in Troy. And those guys ride Tuesday, Thursdays, and a lot of Saturdays. And in downtown Rochester, you hook up with the Pink Creek and the Clinton River Trail. Yep. And then from the Clinton River, you can hook up with the Macomb Orchard Trail. You can also take a back way into Stony Creek Metro Park from there.
Yep.
So lots of options. Main Street Bikes also is part of my charity ride that I'm doing out of there May 4th. You guys might not know about that. And it's called Cruising for the Trails. I've done it since 2013. I've raised about $25,000 now for the Clinton River and Pink Creek Trail. So this year we're riding the Clinton River Trail, but next year we'll go back to the Pink Creek Trail and take it basically to Lake Orion and back.
Awesome.
Yeah, right, that's kind of why we got everything tied into it originally was we wanted to still do beer, right? So sure. In this case, we're using a brewery, but we had the last couple of years used Clubhouse BFD, and we'd ride into Rochester and back out to the cider mill, the Pink Creek Cider Mill, and you'd get a donut and beer and come back. But the trail's under construction, part of it's under construction. So
that's what I heard, yeah, the cyclists were murmuring about that.
I'm sure they were bitching about it, right? But it's a good thing. They're replacing a bridge, and it's all for the better.
Yeah, let's fix our roads first. Yeah. We'll get to the cycle trails later.
Well, that's different. That's different money. Just so that we're clear. I don't want to get you all revved up now. I know a little bit about how all that works.
Yeah, I'm sure,
so I'm good friends with the Pink Creek Trail folks. They're a really good partners. Same with the Clinton River Trail folks, and same with Main Street Bikes. That's a great shop to work with. They have two locations: the one in Lake Orion and the one in Washington Township. They have like a riding club, and not the same club that's coming into your brewery, but some more guys that are racers. They will come out and be like my SAG support on the ride. So you need that, because I don't really want to have to be changing tires the whole time, but these guys are awesome, and they all got skills beyond me on doing that. And all I got to do is make sure they have beer.
Yeah.
So I know how to do that.
That's why we got into it. Make sure everyone's got beer, for sure.
That's why you guys started a brewery, too.
Yeah. Amen. Mm-hmm.
So was it always the plan to have the whole family involved in the business?
Yeah, I think that was it. Obviously, Joe's the brewer, and you know, Dad was a big part of pulling that together. But I'm the marketing guy. I do the artwork, and you know, we did just happen to have a good amount of skills to start a business. So it's you see, like I said, you learn so much along the way. 2 years into it, I think we're a very functioning unit. So.
I mean, you came in, you were talking to each other, you weren't fighting or anything. You came in the same car, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, Joe moved all the way from Australia to be here, so obviously I think he was dedicated to the cause.
Yeah, that's a good point. So what was that like? So where did you live in Australia? Why were you in Australia?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah, why don't we start with that?
Quality of life.
That's a long story.
I've met a lot of Australians, by the way, but I'll let you explain first before I say that.
Right. So, I mean, my wife's from Australia. We met over there. So we were living over there for about 4 years, started a family and all that. But then the brewery opportunity came up. So I was sort of half joking talking to Dad about, oh, if you open a brewery, we'll move back from Australia.
And then he does that.
He actually did it. Yeah. So then we had to follow
through. They wanted to see their grandkids.
Does that make you like the favorite son? Is that how that is?
I'm the middle
child. Let's not get into that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to get it going here today. I knew it was a good day.
I'm the needy one. That's about
it. Is that what it is? You're the needy one?
No, there you go.
Oh, that's funny. Where in Australia?
We were on the West Coast in Perth.
I make it sound like I would even know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like so if you didn't say Sydney, I'd buy the ocean. Shit,
so. By
everybody
the ocean.
Knows Sydney. But, yeah. Yeah. So Australia is about the size of the U.S. when you think about east to west. So
it's, sure,
it's a 5-hour flight across from Sydney over
oh,
there.
Oh, wow. So. Okay. I had a, I did a side gig where I was a step-on guide for 84 dealers that were from Australia and New Zealand about 2 years ago with my motor coach company, Cars Motor Coach. What's up? And it was super fun. So like Ford was hosting them and had all these things planned for them, but they really needed like a person on each bus that could lay out history and just answer the barrage of questions as you're driving around Detroit and Metro. It was wild. It was a good paid gig, but it was so funny having just, you know, two bus fulls of heavy, thick Australian and New Zealand accents. And I was so nervous I was going to say stuff wrong because, I mean, my forte is taking people to breweries and I know history, but sure. I'm not like, that's not what I do every day is give Detroit history, right? So I had all these pages of notes, but it's like partway through it in like the thickest Australian accent. It was like, mate. You know, I can't.
Yeah, you nailed it. You nailed it,
right? Yeah, I can't emulate it. It's like, babe, whatever you say, we're going to like and listen to.
Sure,
and I was just like, oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
You know, we're not from here. So just the questions were just like all over the place. Like, why do so many houses have fences around them?
Why is there that big rubber tire?
Yeah, just everything you would see as you're driving by, stuff we would just take for granted, not even think about. Right? That would be their question.
Sure.
Like all the other notes about the history of the city and all that other shit, right?
Yeah.
That's good stuff, but like that wasn't really what I was curve asked, right? I was like, okay, you know, and then I would just all random stuff and do my best or just make up answers if I could, you know. And
yeah, I actually drew the straw to pick up all the Australians for the airport for when they got married over here in the U.S. And it's like, man, I really wish I had more to show them than a pointless blue bridge and this giant rubber tire. They're like, say, this is Detroit, eh? It's good. And I'm like, oh, yeah, there's more. there's a lot of good things.
That's always the challenge, right? Because like as a, you know, you care about the city you're from. Yeah. So you want to show people, you know, what makes it great. And I just had like I had a private tour 2 weeks ago and it was consultants, but they were from all over the world. And it was a beer tour thing and, you know, and they all wanted to drink and stuff, but the same thing, right? Like I picked them up at the Westin Book Cadillac and we're, you know, taking them by where stadiums are till we get to the brewery. So you're trying to explain all this cool stuff that's going on. And most of them seem to get it. I mean, I had people from Germany, Belgium, India, just all kinds of crazy places. It's so wild. Do you get back to Australia much?
Oh, yeah. We were back for Christmas this year.
Were you?
So
okay.
Checking out breweries while we're over there, too.
So what's that scene like in Australia, then?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Even two and a half years since I left there, there's way more breweries now. It's kind of like it's almost like the American craft brew scene maybe 10 years ago.
Okay. That doesn't surprise me.
That start of that, you know, many small breweries forming everywhere.
So like a light, a red, a stout, maybe something hoppy? Oh, or are they jumping in, or do they jump in a little further ahead?
No, not at all.
Oh, okay.
They're still light. Well,
no, I mean, even a stout was really hard to find.
Okay.
Really? It's just like, yeah, they don't really branch out too much. So, I mean, a few places did.
It's funny what we've gotten used to. It's like you have to go back and see that to remind yourself like how much we've progressed here in the U.S. And definitely Michigan was ahead of the game, but the rest of the U.S. for sure now.
Yeah.
Well,
some of the styles that we brew on our core menu now, it's sort of like styles that have been lost from craft beer menus. Like we've got our Whamber Ale, which is an amber ale. It's got some wheat in it, so we call it Whamber. But amber ales are kind of hard to find these days.
Sure.
I totally agree. I was having a conversation with someone on Friday about that. And he worked for Jolly North Peak, right? And they have a pretty good amber ale. And that's what I was telling him. I'm going, I really love amber ales, and I wish I could get it a little more often. I'm sure I've had it every time I've been to your brewery, and I'm sure we had a good – every time – now I remember – this time I wrote down to remind myself the Australian hookup. I swear last time, I think it might have been your dad explaining it to me again. I'm like, that's right.
Yeah, you've told
me that like three times.
Yeah, we have a lot of Australian-themed beer names like the Budgie Smuggler and, you know, other such things. And we've got a lot of beers that feature the Galaxy hops, which we've got a pretty good supply of thanks to Joe. So
explain the Galaxy hop to folks that wouldn't necessarily understand that.
Well, I know that's one of the designer hops out there. It's one of our main hops that goes into our Ruckachuck IPA as well as our Zephyros, our New England style. But we do buy direct, correct? That's something we get from Australia.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha. And shady vacuum packed little bags that often get caught up in customs. So
I was just going to say, so that must be a challenge at times,
yeah,
right? Like figuring out shipping and making sure you got enough of that for upcoming batches.
Yeah, we made sure we ordered a lot. Mm-hmm. So
I guess the good thing
we're
is
good for now.
That will last.
Sure. Well, that was Rucka Chuck was a single hopped IPA originally, correct? And mm-hmm. then we switched over because, you know, and I think there's, you know, Old Nation's one of those breweries I've heard is, you know, trying to, again, re-kind of form the M43 to be a little bit more Michigan friendly. But it's really, really difficult getting your hands on what we call the designer hops. And I think in, especially in the New England style, people are like, why is this beer so expensive? It's, you know, it's only 6%. It's not a 12%er, but it's the cost of the ingredients, the amount of these hard to get hops. It's kind of an interesting black market, how hop value goes up.
I think
and down.
To the consumer though, yeah. they don't understand any of that at
sure.
all.
Yeah.
And I get it. And I probably don't until it's explained to me
yeah.
either. And I know a little more than the average Joe when it comes to that, but I think that's a hard thing from a consumer. It's like, oh, but I got like a 15-pack of all-day IPA at Costco for $15. Like, why does that cost so much more at your brewery? Like, it has to be a constant
economy
challenge.
Of scale. So,
yeah,
you know, there's a lot of things you know, you don't want to get into. That's the thing. When you open up a business, the number one thing I hear most, you know what you should do? You know what you should do? Why do you do this?
Everyone's always got an idea. You know?
Some of them are great. You know, that's the thing as a business owner. You can't always shut your ears to what's going on. And I think from a brewery standpoint, yeah, we're very open to input. We've got actually a homebrewer competition that we're doing currently. So we're set to judge it this Sunday, correct?
Yes, this Sunday.
Yes, so we'll be doing a Hefeweizen, and we're choosing from some of our local Oxfordians have submitted their.
We got about 30 entries.
Yeah, so we got a lot of beer to taste.
Is that the first time you guys have done that?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah, I thought so.
So we're working on it, but it's an obligation we have to taste 30 beers. It's going to be awful.
Yeah, it looks like it'd be a rough go.
Yeah.
I'm excited because we haven't actually brewed a Hefe yet, and that's one of my favorite styles.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
so
a good time of
the,
season.
The first place prize for this competition is for the winner to come into the brewery with us and brew their beer, and then we'll put it on tap.
How cool. So. I think people – that's just a thrill for people to get the shot at that. I would think.
Yeah.
Every time a brewery does it, it always seems like it gets a lot of good PR around
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. Come operate the squeegee, please.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Scrub. Can you clean up and do all
is.
Can you clean up and do all the crap Joe doesn't want to do?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you actually get to do then,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
But, for free.
Yeah, but they get their name
yeah, even
on
better,
it.
Right? Yeah. There's no labor charge to that.
No, that's an interesting thing is, you know, the amount of people that are interested in getting their foot in the door in the brewing industry. And it's like, because, you know, a typical question, and how'd you get into this? You know, and, you know, even 2-3 years ago when we were starting, there weren't a lot of educational programs in place. I know Schoolcraft had one. I actually
right.
took a few classes there.
Did you? Okay.
And some of the bigger schools are getting into that. So there's it's cool to see an actual career path now for brewing, distillation, et cetera. But you see a lot of brewers have to – how'd you get into brewing? Well, I homebrewed and then couldn't get a paying job, so I started my own. I mean, it really has to be a passion of yours. You can't half-ass wanting to brew. You know, it's not, you know, printing money. You got to ease yourself into it. You know,
if you half-ass it, people tell you right away.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right. That's the other part of it. As a brewer, you have to start getting a little thicker skin or get used to listening to people's input at times. Sometimes that's cool, and sometimes that's like, just let me do this.
That's why Joe does the morning hours. I do the PM hours, so I get to hear the input. But
stop reading Facebook reviews. Right?
Amen. Or Untappd reviews. It is what it is. But I mean,
everyone's got an opinion, though. I mean, 10 years of running a tour business, and you know, I'm constantly asked, "Who do you like? What do you like? Where's your favorite place? What's your favorite beer?" Mm. I hate getting asked stuff like that. And I just say, you know what I like? I like the brewery I'm at. Like today,
amen.
I like drinking homegrown brewing because I'm hanging out with you guys. And
sure.
I'm excited and privileged that I get to do that, right? But people get caught in their own brains with the stuff. And they, you know, there's the people who like to overanalyze everything or nothing's good enough for them kind of thing. And whatever, man, it's a free country.
Yeah. Well, I know what I'm saying?
Like,
it's like the grown comic book world, you know, when you're talking about bottle collectors, et cetera. And a lot of these guys have great input, but it's like, you know, there's so much good beer out there that it's like, you said it, like, I like whatever brewer I'm at. As long as you're drinking close to the source, then you're good, you know, and that goes back to staying small and doing it right. It's like, you know, this is the best beer. No, the best beer is the freshest beer. As long as you're, you know, and that's, again, goes back to our design is like, hey, you know, we want to be in charge of our quality, and staying small, I think, is the right move currently. So
I think people, I hope people a certain percentage of people are appreciating that aspect of it more when they see it. Like, I think all my friends around me, when we see that right away, well, that's who we want to support. That's mm-hmm. who we want to go after. We just did a Grand Rapids road trip with a couple, another couple that are beer friendly folks. And we seeked out places like that. Like, I didn't go to, they're like, did you go to Founders? Did you go to Hopcamp? Like, hey, those are great places. Fine. But I could get that stuff anywhere.
Sure. Sure.
You know?
Yeah, I actually just recently, for the first time, did a self-guided brewery tour. It was my first vacation. It was very good. I went to the west side of the state, you know, went did Grand Haven. You know, I did all up in there. And that's a great beer scene because you can literally – I was like, oh, it's going to be a road trip. It wasn't a road trip because every day I was driving 10 minutes
yep.
to the next
that's
town.
That's how we
breweries.
Were too. We didn't really have yeah. to go that far.
Yeah.
And we were able to try a lot of stuff. I mean, that's what's fun about a lot of things being more compact, closer to each
sure.
other. I'm going to Friday. I fly out to Florida. I'm going to St. Petersburg.
Okay, hell yeah.
And they have a beer trail map like every other state does. But just for that side of Florida, they have one. And just in the area that I'm going to be in, 16 breweries.
Wow.
Like, nice. I'm not saying an hour apart. I'm saying like
right there.
Within 30 minutes, like there's 16 breweries.
Yeah.
Some do. So I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah. Actually, you know? I looked at the Michigan beer map the other day and, you know, maybe we should have looked at this prior opening, but you look at, you know, where Oxford is, it's outside that, you know, main mass, you know, so obviously you've got Metro Detroit, you've got, you know, the scenes down there, but it's a difficult sell to get people to come out all that way. And 90% of the questions I feel at all these, you know, beer festivals is where's Oxford? So it's,
that was funny when I had the group out and you explained that. And I thought, I never thought about that. You
sure.
probably get asked that stuff a
yeah,
lot, right?
Yeah, we do. But, you know, it's got its advantages. Like during the summertime, there's a lot of golf courses out there. You know, we get a lot of traffic out that way. But, yeah, it's a great little town. And, you know, we definitely want to support that community. So,
did you guys grow up then all in Oxford?
Yep. Mm-hmm. We were born, down Hazel Park, Ferndale area. And then Dad moved us out in 89-90, and we've been out in Oxford since, and we've obviously done our adult moving around, but yeah, now we're back
so,
in Oxford.
So all of you guys have houses then in Oxford?
I'm in Lake Orion.
You're in Lake Orion,
which is the neighboring town.
Yeah. Okay. So. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. That's far cool. enough away to not be too close to work, but it's only like 10-minute drive. So,
like, you're not just opening up your door and your dad and mom and dad are walking in. It's not like
well,
everybody loves Raymond.
I've slept on the couch downstairs plenty of times. But that opening 2 weeks was rough. So,
oh, I'll bet, right? Yeah, you definitely get to know each other a lot. I mean, yeah. when I started my tour business, my whole family's all engaged in everything I do too. So my parents are my R&D team. And
yep.
my dad's going to be there tonight when I do this Prohibition history talk. I'm not even sure I invited him, but he was there when
proud.
I did the beer history one last spring
yeah.
At your brewery. He had a good time sitting in the back.
Yeah, but any small business owner, like
– you got to do that.
Yeah, I mean – it's so much massive respect for anybody who starts their own business. And that's like, I'm never going to sit here and say, you know what you should do? Cause I know you know what you're doing. So it's like, yeah, man.
But I don't mind. I don't mind hearing it either. In just the same way that everyone yeah. wants to give you feedback. Like I get feedback constantly. Just sometimes it's just like the second I tell them what I do, then they're instantly giving me like 5, 6 before they even understood what I said, you know?
Yeah.
No, that's not what I said I did,
yeah.
right?
But
you know what you should do?
Yeah.
You should drive across the country and go to wineries. Yeah, I just said I was a beer tour business. And, you know, you try to be like so nice, right? You know, I know what beer styles you should brew, Joe. You should brew blah, 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 right? And you try to be friendly about those
Definitely.
Types of things and
yeah, but
you just kind of go with it.
I think the cool thing that's happening in the craft industry right now is, you know, you've got this big demographic that's only, you know, growing and growing. People are Yeah, they're educated enough to be dangerous, but they want to learn more. They want to learn more. And, you know, that's our kind of brewery is, you know, you said the Poly. It's, you know, straightforward, good, light drinker. And that's, you know, how we designed our menu as far as our core beers are concerned. You know, we're brewing good beer. We're not doing science experiments. Yeah, I love creative brewing. You know, that's for sure. But, you know, we're, again, keeping within a good fundamental, you know, as far as quality is concerned. So good, clean, drinkable goes well with food. And that's
Ooh, this
what
is
want.
Nice.
Is that
speaking
the
of? Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't
yeah.
mean cut you off.
Nope.
Yeah. The Brute. That's good. I've been kind of hit or miss with those. I'm not.
Yeah. What's your opinion on it? Because
I don't know.
There's not
you
a
know,
lot out here.
I don't know. It's not totally my thing.
Sure.
I though I have to say I'd like this. It's clean.
Yep.
So is this the first time you've done a Brute?
This is our second version of it.
Okay.
Yeah, same.
What did you change
then?
Oh, it's the same recipe.
Yeah, same recipe. Just fine tuning the process.
More brute?
I don't know. More brute. It's a little bit drier than last time.
Okay. So, yeah. Maybe that's what I'm picking up
on. I think you nailed it, though.
Maybe that's why I'm thinking I like it a little more.
Yeah. For those home brewers out there, the final gravity on it was 0.999. So.
Oh, I was thinking it was actually, a 998, so damn. All right.
Lighter than water. Lighter than water.
Right?
Yeah, and unfortunately, we're drinking out of solo cups. And,
yeah.
And you're on the radio, so you can't see it, but it's a beautiful, clear beer, and that's it's kind of almost what I would say is the answer to the haze craze that's going on. So it's been a nice, refreshing spring beer that is, it's clear, it's drinkable, it's crisp, it's very smashable for springtime.
Smashable. Oh, that's quite a word.
Yeah. The I am brute. Naming beers too, that's always a fun thing.
So who gets to name?
Whomever happens to be right there when we tap the keg.
It's a team effort.
Yeah. Is it?
Yeah. You look up online and you try to do puns. Everybody's done it. It's one of those things that I am brute. We've got the red Sheeran. That's our Irish red.
That's a funny name. I like that.
That would be Kylie. She came up with that. But we have a lot of fun pretty much when we tap the keg. We don't even know. I'm about ready to write it on the beer board. Like,
someone's got to say something.
What's the name?
Right?
We should get a better system for that because we're like,
it's not like you're in a boardroom with everyone that works for you around a table and you're voting. And
no, it's like
brainstorming, right? Yeah. It's not like that.
Like, oh, we got a post on Facebook. What's it called? I don't know. Think of a pun. Do it.
Some of my best ideas come from out drinking with friends, and something will come out of the blue. And you have to be smart enough to, like, say it into your phone to record it or write it down fast or something.
I text myself.
I find myself doing that stuff a lot. Most of the stuff changes in our logos and catchphrases we've used. All that stuff's come out of weird things like that. Not some amazing, brainstorming session. It's not
deep
like that.
Thought out.
I'd like to think that I have that, even though I have a sales and marketing background and corporately, I did things like that for many years, right? But running a business, just you're doing so many things. You wear a lot of hats that sometimes just as simple as, shit, we're tapping this new beer. We got that name on there, right?
Better processes, systems, and methods. We don't quite have them in place for everything, but,
we're getting.
But you're 2 years in. So, I mean, it took me multiple years to really come up with better systems for what I do, and I'm constantly tweaking that. And then I'll look at it and be like, why wasn't I always doing it that way? It seems so obvious. But it doesn't as you're first experiencing things like that, right?
Yep.
And it just takes a lot of experience to do that, What hours should you be open? What should be on your food menu? What should be your beer list, right? Like those types of decisions will just flush themselves out as you experience it.
Yeah. And there's nobody who can tell you, like I said earlier, there's no book for it. You got to know your market. You got to know what you're about. And, and also you can't, knee jerk and change constantly. You do have to give it a little bit of time to catch on. And we've seen an awesome return in regional traffic. I'll call it regional in quotation marks, but surrounding towns, people are really coming out for the beer. And once we really got our feet under us and we were really doing a lot of rotating beers and, we were putting on new beer on tap every, 1 to 2 weeks. And that's what, people really want to do. And what keeps people coming back is the new stuff. So we're looking at expanding our draft list, hopefully in the next 2 to 3 months.
So how many do you keep on now?
We've got 10 taps currently, and one cider, two wines. We're looking at least getting 4 more taps. And that's one of those things that, you should have thought of is like, we should have ran 10.
That's still a good way to kick it off though. I guess that's a difference, right? Like back to what you're saying in Australia and breweries opening up. I'm sure they're not opening up with a dozen taps.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, there's but
no
it's, chance, it's a little hard to rip up the cement and run.
Totally,
so,
right?
Even if you can't keep them full, like it's good to have those options. So it's like one of those things, okay. But even then, as you talked about all the beer bars with 80 beers on tap, it's
too much.
Well, it's – and even for the customer, if you see good program restaurants, people are shrinking their menus. People have this fear of missing out when you look at this massive draft list, and it's got to be, again, tough to manage the quality when you have 80 beers on draft and dealing with, how many different vendors. It's got to be a nightmare, but, keeping it to, I think 15, 16 beers would probably
It's that KISS concept, right? Keep it simple, stupid.
There you go.
And a lot of people get too caught up in, oh, it should be a good idea. I'll add that. I'll add this. I'll add that. And then things get a little too fat and a little too hard to maneuver around. And there's lots of beer bars where I think they don't put enough thought into, they just, they have 4 distributors coming in there and each distributor's got a million beers to offer. So they would try to give enough of them love that it makes their list really big. And to a customer, wow, it's too much
yeah.
when I go in there, right? And I can't, I don't know. You know, and I know stuff, but yet I still don't want to have to look at all those choices.
Sure.
And my other bitch with a lot of those places are the server comes up to you the second you sit down. It's like, what do you want? And I'm like, I just looked at this list that had 80 beers on it.
20 minutes.
Yeah.
Water.
Like, right. I get that there's still that percentage of people that come in every day and they order a beer, mm-hmm. right? And their beer means, you know, the light whatever. And then that's just, they just live in that world and they don't worry. And that's cool, man. And that's a segment.
Sure.
Right. But if you're going to be a bar that has all these options, you got to understand what the rest of the people are like.
Sure. And, right? You know, we were talking earlier, you know, the Amber and the Browns, and we've gotten a little self-distribution, and a lot of the bar owners we're talking about are after those styles because they can't find them. It's like,
oh, I'm sure.
I have 30 taps and 29 of them are IPA.
Yeah.
What else can you give me? And it's, and you know, that's again, a cool thing about our demographic and our market and our regulars, it's cool to watch them grow with us and have, okay, I'm tried and true Whamber, man. This is what I drink. And, you know, they keep coming back and seeing, you know, the new stuff that we put out. And that's, like I said, that's what keeps people coming back is this change and, you know, the new beers you put out. And as long as you can grow and keep your quality, then that's important for sure.
So would Whamber be your best seller then?
Not bestseller, but it's definitely what I would stake as our most drinkable flagship beer, if you will. That's not an IPA.
It's a popular regular beer.
Yes, okay. our regulars yeah. Definitely slam that a lot. So yeah. It's a unique beer. It's drinkable. It's something that you're proud of. That's not an imperial. That is not a barrel aged. That's not an IPA. You know, those are kind of the cool beers. So it's kind of good to have a middle of the road beer that you're super proud of. So
I'd say the last few years I found myself drinking more of those styles.
Yep.
So I've kind of gone full circle and come back. Right now when I go to beer festivals and I'm trying out new places, I'm trying to see if they make a good Kolsch or a cream ale or a good brown or red. Yep. If they have that on draft, I'm definitely kind of seeking it out. I'm sure people think that that's super boring, right? But I mean, I've had plenty of experimental beers, and hey, man, that's cool if that's your thing. We were already kind of talking about mm-hmm. some of that, but I'm past most of that now. Sure. Every once in a while, I'll probably sample something like that, but I don't go out and I'm sure not going out and buying a sixer like that. I can't believe that people do that all the time, and then they have one, they don't like it, and then they just blew $10 to $12 on a sure. sixer, right? Like I just, maybe I'm too practical as I get older that I've started to think that way.
No, yeah, you're but, not alone there, I think.
And I read a market study too. They're talking about younger millennials, and you see this shift towards even the bigger guys are starting to do is lighter beers, you know, session mm-hmm. beers and
totally.
Some lagers. And we just got into a lot of lagering lately, and, you know, for the science behind it, it's not exactly easy, you know, the fermentation time's a little bit longer. It requires a
couple more weeks for sure, right?
Yeah, yeah. And the glycol chilling process, the demand on the system is a little different, but I think you've nailed the lagers. You know, they're good, clean, drinkable beers, and it's something I think people are wanting more of out of craft beer, not just out of the Bud Light and the big
beer. It's also a way to expand the market, in my mm-hmm. opinion, and not make everything so off-putting to the average Joe who never really drank better beer or local beer for that matter.
Yeah, well, that's right? You were talking cream ale. That's, you know, our light beer, our go-to. We have also got the Honey Boo Lager, which is really good. But yeah, it's I mean this in the best way possible. That's our craft beer with training wheels.
Yeah, like, sure.
This is a safe zone.
Like,
this
is Oxford Ale. Yeah,
but I have those friends, right, mm-hmm. that are in that zone, and now they're excited. They're more excited than ever.
Sure.
You know, and they're not just buying Bud Light when they go to their little towny bar, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. now those towny bars have gotten smarter and carry those things where they used to not do that. And I'm sure there's bars in Oxford that are the same way. And my friend now is occasionally will call me and be like, hey, man, I got a friend. I'm going to Ohio. What should I drink there? And then I think of the range of stuff he's in, and I start suggesting stuff where before he would never have said that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he would have been maybe excited that he had Yingling that time, you know, and I got him a little bit past that, right? So,
yep.
Okay. Wow. We're just rolling.
It's good.
Like 40 minutes in. That's awesome. I barely looked at my notes. So you guys are in a historic building, a pretty big building, 5,300 square feet. Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah, I believe about. Sounds I mean, right. It can be.
I don't know. That's what your website says. Yeah. So. So it's a historic building. Too. What did that building used to be? Do you guys remember?
The prior owner was owned by the city. So it was a VFW hall / township meeting center. So they had a meeting room upstairs and they did bingo and euchre and whatnot. But it was, you know, it was sitting, maybe they used it 2-3 days a week. And it's this big, beautiful building. The front was built in the early 1900s. It's got, you know, all the natural brick, you know, pretty straightforward building. And then the back is, you know, a cinder block addition. And yeah, we did a number on it. So it does yeah. look beautiful. I mean,
I wouldn't have thought.
That's the one thing you can't, you know, you can't sacrifice atmosphere. You know, I said earlier, we're about the brick and mortar. We're about, you know, welcoming people in. And I think we aced it on that. We've got the patio out back, but it's a really cool building. When we first were looking Holly Romeo, kind of smaller, quaint, you know, good downtowns, walkable.
Okay.
And we weren't looking in Oxford. I mean, there was nothing available. This building popped up. It just all fell together.
So it makes sense convenient. When I go. Sure. First time I came out, I'm like, wow, this really fits right where we're at.
Yeah. Yeah. It's worked out. And, you know, like I said, we've had got the patio. We've got the upstairs private rental room. So it's turned into a beast for sure when you're talking about running, you know, okay, basically a banquet hall, an entertainment center downstairs with live music, all this stuff. And you know, after 2 years in, it's good having that versatility in that space. But it's taken some time to learn how to run a monster like that. So we wanted to be kind of tiny, but this building was
too nice. It's good having a family where you got multiple people that are engaged in it. So for sure. Besides you two and your dad, kind of explain who else is doing stuff from the family, and we got some wives involved here,
sure,
right? Or
yeah.
a wife? Wait, a yeah. wife?
Not, yeah, my sure. wife.
It's your wife. I apologize. It's your wife. Okay.
Yep. Well, we got my mom, Marie Power. She's right? She's on board. She just recently retired. She's you know, instrumental in the design of the place. She's, you know, a great home cook, and she's, you know, again, helping me out with a lot of the rental stuff. So she's our powerful matriarch that I get to go to.
Wow, that's a bold statement. Powerful matriarch. Okay. Yeah,
and then we've got Kate, Joe's wife. She's our media correspondent. She handles the website, all our social media marketing. She does all the nice write-ups. And, you know, it's basically our media.
That's laser. Why all that stuff looks so good, because you have someone that's doing it.
Yeah.
Clearly, it showed right away the second you guys opened and all my interaction. That's who I'm interacting with, I think, isn't it?
Kate? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But then there's Katie.
Yep, that's my sister. So she, you know, is obviously on.
I'm not sure
well.
I knew there was a Kate and a Katie until I looked at. I was doing research the other day. I'm like, wait, there's a Kate and a Katie. Shit.
Yeah.
If I screwed that up, oh my god.
Nah, it'll be all right. So yeah.
So Katie's. What's she doing then?
She was originally our social media correspondent well.
I see.
And no, I mean, she's helping day in, day out with a lot of the stuff that we have off site as well. You know, she comes in, helps clean, all that stuff. So,
Adds up.
She's another stress
taste
outlet.
Tester.
Taste tester. She's another outlet I get to go, you know, blow some steam
reality
off
check, right? You need people that can give you reality checks,
amen.
I think.
For sure. That's definitely a. Definitely
like, that's what my
contributes.
Wife does for me. Like, if she's gone and I don't have a chance to, like, ask those types of questions.
Definitely.
I'm bothering my friends with that stuff, right? And they don't always want to hear that. Or she doesn't have a choice because we're married and legal things, right? But, it's nice to have family to be able to lean on and get those extra resources.
Definitely. And, you know, like I said, it's kind of a typical story that, you know, this family starts up a brewery. But if you look at the – if you look at the space, it's beautiful. If you look at the quality of our product, it's great. Like I'm really
this
proud.
Logo. I mean, like this logo, for example, that's on the pint glass that I'll take a picture of, folks, and I'll post that to my Instagram.
Thank you so
and
much.
All that good stuff, right? I'll probably do it in a different place so it won't look so crappy the way I'm doing it now. But
image is important. Yeah, I mean, people definitely. I don't want to call it shelf shop, but you know, you look at it and branding. People wear brewery merchandise a little bit different than you know your average restaurant. It's almost like a varsity jacket. People like to represent the breweries. They like to collect. Things it's definitely an important aspect, and people do judge with their eyes as well. So having that cool logo and that cool looking place and all that is quite an important
Ooh,
thing.
Awesome. So. Coffee porter. I love Ooh. Coffee porters. I totally agree. So is this tied to the White Pine?
Yes, White Pine and Lake Orion. Yep, great guys to deal with.
Yep, they made the cold brew coffee for us, a special double strength batch.
That's what this is, a cold brew?
For us to
I'm going to be flying.
So this does have caffeine in it.
It does have
Ooh,
caffeine.
Ooh, good. Two for one there.
Oh, yeah.
I was just thinking, Jeff, you needed some caffeine.
Yeah.
So.
I need it, man. I live on coffee. Live on White Pine.
Ooh, yeah, they make awesome
How'd
coffee.
You guys find these guys?
You're the coffee
Whoa,
guy.
Whoa, that is intense.
good foreign trip.
I don't know. For some reason, you know why? It's because I had like a vanilla Java porter last night, which would be very super tame. I love that beer, but it'd be like super tame compared to this.
Yeah. Sure.
And wow.
Yeah, ooh. you were the coffee shopper, because I'm a functional coffee drinker. I do it for the caffeine, but you know, Australia's got a good cafe culture. So yeah, we definitely left that up to you and Kate, because she loves her good cuppa.
Became a coffee snob in the Southern Hemisphere. Yeah.
You did? Okay.
I don't know. These guys started up probably maybe a year or two before we did.
Okay.
But they were just sort of breaking onto the scene, I guess, when we started up.
So they just wholesale, and then
we buy their coffee. That's the coffee we serve at our place too, like for brunch and stuff.
But, and kind of before we started recording here, I was telling you about the Fourth Coast Cider Works, which is essentially like a door down from them in Orient Township in this industrial area that I went to directly after touring your brewery in December. We took people in there, and how funny is that? It's right by them. Yeah, I'm not sure if they have a cider coffee drink there. I'll have to check that out. I don't know about that.
I did have a customer last night combine our cider and the stout. So, I mean, if you want to talk about that cross.
I think porters and stouts, that really fits well. Sure. I have to say, though, I do enjoy a lot of the folks that have been doing them with blonde ales even, like Bean Flick of Blonde from Odd Side, and a lot of breweries have kind of played with that.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the obvious one. I feel like I always have to explain this to the novices, the coffee porters, because I think people are like, what do you mean it's a coffee porter? And I'm like... It makes sense, though.
Yeah.
And this is strong. So this has a nice kick to it.
Yeah. Well, we like those guys, too, because they take a really similar business approach to us. They're really, like, detail-oriented, and they just want to do everything super, like, the right way.
Product first.
And it really shows in what they do. So
don't completely quote me on this, but we are recording it, so I guess it's getting quoted.
It's on the internet. It's
so
there forever.
My friend Jason in Lake Orion, he's about to open Oat Soda in I don't know, June maybe. And I think this is going to be his coffee producer in there, or they're going to be set up in there.
I would think so. Well, and I'm just judging.
He's a huge fan of them.
Yeah, I'm just judging on social media activity, because when we did publish this post with White Pine, he liked it. So Oat Soda liked it.
Okay,
Jason's great.
Yeah,
he's going to have.
I just saw him like on Friday, and it's not like I didn't ask him this, but yeah, he was the one who told me about the cider place to begin with, because he was going there to buy their coffee.
Sure.
And then when I was researching, I'm like, oh wow, I use their coffee. Like, what a small world, you know? Yeah.
Well, there's a lot going on. Like, you know, we've been talking about how difficult it is to pull out in that northern market, but you know, between a lot of the small businesses that are opening out that way, you've got Oat Soda, you've got, you know, White Pine Coffee Porter. It's a cool little sect that's, you know, kind of arising. And one thing that we do and take pride in is locally sourcing. So we've got White Pine out of Lake Orion. We've got Motor City Malt House out in Shelby. And one thing we haven't touched on is our kitchen. You know, the amount of locally sourcing.
I swear you're reading my notes here. I'm like looking at my notes. I'm like, talk about Scratch Kitchen. Talk about locally sourced products. It's like you're reading my notes. That's so funny. All right, continue.
Sure, sure. And I mean, you know, as a business, you know, you got to think, especially as a brewer, you're like, to do food or to not do food. And Joe is talking about detail orientation, you know, quality of product, you know, and obviously, you know, with the square footage that we have, we're like, we got to serve food, and we got to serve the best food. We went out and, you know, we've got a really talented team. Adam DeMonico, shout out to our executive chef. He does a fantastic job with, again, taking advantage of our geographical location by sourcing from Oxford and Metamora. We get, you know, food. We get produce from, you know, a lot of the farms just,
I mean,
know,
pretty much it's all farms outside of the downtown border. Isn't
farms
it?
And golf courses.
That's what I thought.
Plenty of golf courses. So, but I think what we do with the food marriage, you know, marries perfectly with what we do for the beer. You know, if you're going to do, and hence the name homegrown, okay, it's all locally sourced. It's
oh, now I get it.
Grassroots, baby. But yeah, it does pair well with, you know, what we do as far as focusing on quality, keeping a small menu, locally sourcing. And, you know, if you are making your food from start to finish, you know, you can make sure it's pairing perfectly. You can, again, do these custom beer pairing dinners that we do.
So once a month, right?
Once a month.
Brews and Bites.
Yeah, there you go. Typically every Thursday.
I
want to
say something from my notes, right? Thursdays at 7, typically $50, 5 courses, 5 beers, right?
Yep, you got
okay.
it. You got it. And it's a different menu every time. And if you're not into beer, we do have our cider and wine that we can substitute for that. It's kind of missing the point, but that's okay. Come on out if you're a foodie. But yeah, that's a
the
really
food is good. For
it's
us,
it's phenomenal. I mean, I
so
can't
it gives
go on
it gives
enough.
Your chef and your team there a chance to kind of flex their muscles and do some fun stuff.
Sure, and it gives our clientele who you know wants more and wants trust in the brewer and trust in the chef to have that fine you know that moment where they're like yeah.
Did you find that as a bit of education for your customers at first, maybe, that might not have been used to having that option in their area?
Sure. Well,
because I would assume no one else is necessarily doing that in the Oxford area.
Ish. I mean, obviously, we're the only brewery, so.
I understand that. But restaurants, beer bars, whatever, sometimes they do that stuff, too. But there really isn't anyone up that way that would have been doing that.
Victoria's down the road. They do like a wine pairing type
thing.
They do?
Thing, and okay. That's wine. We're not talking about wine.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're at least the pioneer in that. And
very cool.
But again, like, you know, since we're creating everything from scratch, brewing everything in house, it's this cool 360 degree product that, you know, it's not like, you know, we're doing this weird food except for Hot Dog Monday. That's what's very funny about Hot Dog Monday is we feature
a it is
scratch
a little
kitchen.
Contrast.
Yeah, it is. But you know, I like that day just because it's a laid back day.
I like the fact that you give the staff or I mean the kitchen staff basically that's their day off.
Yeah. Well, and again, being in a rural area, it's kind of difficult to, you know, keep open 7 days a week and make sure you get that traffic. I mean, we're a weekend spot, we're a seasonal spot. So Monday, you know, you're not going to see that action that's going to be, you know, kind of worthwhile opening your doors. But, you know, I get a lot of people who coming in for the first time and, you know, I'll get 2 to 4 people that come in for the first time and it's worth it because I can actually talk them through the beer, talk them through the food, you know, kind of get them to come back and see the full product. So it's been worth it there.
Do you give your brother there a chance to talk at the beer pairing dinners?
Yeah. I mean, when he's there, my dad's there, it's usually one of the –
That's got to be a fun night for all you guys to do that.
Yeah. So that's what we kind of – I mean, Adam comes up, the chef comes up, and, you know, he introduces each, you know, each
dish
round of you know, dishes. And then, you know, my dad or I talks to the beer that's going with it and –
That's really what people want. I've definitely gone to beer pairing dinners where they don't do that. Mm-hmm. And I think, why did I just – I could have just come in and got a flight and ordered some food, right?
Sure. Yeah.
But hearing from you, hearing from the chef, you know, hearing from your dad, like people want to hear that. To you, it might seem minor what you said, but to them, it's a big deal, right? They're excited. They get that interaction with you
that
way.
Yeah, we get lots of questions too. And
sure. Cool. You never know where those questions are going to come from, right? That's good stuff. So like typical crowd up there, what are you getting, like 30 to 50 maybe?
Oh, I wish 50.
I don't know. I'm just
we cap it off at 35 anyway.
Oh, because, okay. I think it'd be hard to manage much beyond
really
30. So.
Our kitchen is pretty darn small and, you know, obviously handling regular service because we're open for regular business.
Okay. I thought.
Kind of got this, you know, this two things going on at once.
And how cool though that you can actually do two things at once.
Yeah.
That was what I was impressed with when I came there and I did that beer history talk first. I'm like, I get to do all this upstairs. This is dope. And there's a whole bar up here.
Yep.
Oh my God. And you know, I don't have people stumbling on me as I'm trying to talk or anything.
Yep. It's been a blessing having that upstairs. And it's on Sunday, we are Baby Shower Brewing Company.
I remember you guys saying that to me, that it was just like special event after special event.
Yeah.
Who would have thought that like 10 years ago that would become kind of the thing people would want to do for special events in general.
Yeah, I'm 32 years old and I throw the meanest baby shower in Oakland.
Right? So. Look at you. I mean, what a nice thing to get endorsed through on like your LinkedIn account.
Yeah, but you know what?
My skills. I'm good at throwing
shower
baby showers.
Expert.
Like I'm really good at doing bachelorette parties now from running a beer tour company. Sure. Like a lot of women, that's their fun time. I get bachelorette parties, anniversary parties. Same gig, right? I'm just rotating around. I'm not in one place.
Yep.
But it's the same type of clientele.
Yeah, but
love those.
It's also kind of a gateway sales opportunity because they just, you know, they want a nice room that they can have, you know, their private event in and do that thing. And, you know, a lot of them don't even know we have our own beer. Like, you do food? And, you know, it's kind of a good opportunity. And then they're blown away by the product. And, you know, the room's obviously nice, but it's really cool to – you know, grab that new customer through an unexpected route, and you know, the baby shower thing, or the bridal shower, or wedding reception, all those things. It's an opportunity for sales, so it's been huge for us. So.
Yeah, anytime you get another opportunity to sell, and that's two sales guys talking. Yeah. There. Sorry, Joe, we're taking you away, right?
The medium hustle—that's what I call.
Yeah. Oh, we can't help it. Wow, I think I might have talked about everything I had on here. I can't believe that. That's amazing. That tells you how organized you are. What else did we not mention? You just recently won. Some awards. A award.
Actually, technically three awards.
Well, I'm sorry. Technically three awards. Yeah. Why don't you tell me about that, Joe?
So it's the New York International Beer Competition. We entered a few beers in it this year, and our Zephyrus Hazy IPA got a gold medal in that one.
Wow, that's cool.
Pretty exciting.
I'm not familiar with that competition, really. I'm not a competition hound necessarily.
Yeah. I mean, it's in New York, so it's not maybe a big one for Michigan.
It all matters, though. I mean, don't let me say I'm belittling. Oh, yeah.
Hardware is hardware.
Yeah,
win,
no
baby.
Doubt, right?
I mean, quite a few Michigan breweries enter that. I mean, Founders was a big winner in that one,
okay.
too. So yeah, we like to say we're, kind of
on par with that. You like that, huh?
We might have been the only two that from Michigan, but whatever.
Who knows?
But that's all right. It's a big, bad world out there. So, I mean, anytime you win for anything.
Well, especially the Hazy, man, because the Hazy's all the rage. Everybody's no doubt. Two or three to get a gold is
huge. You got
a
gold in that.
People love that.
So, yeah, I mean, we got two medals in the IPA categories, too. So our flagship IPA, the Ruckchuck IPA, also it got a bronze medal.
Wow.
And so therefore, we won the Michigan – what was it, the Michigan
IPA Brewery of the Year?
That sounds crazy.
which kind of is contradicting to that, like, hey, we brew all styles. But yeah, people love those beers. So
yeah, that was pretty exciting.
How exciting. Yeah, that's cool.
Our first commercial medals. So that was pretty cool.
That's how you know that you have a talent, that your wife's doing a good job on the website, because I saw it like right when I went on there. I went back to the website just before I came on air, and I was just like, wait a minute. I don't remember seeing that before. Like, she must have just put that
just
on there.
Updated it.
Yeah, we're just waiting for our actual hardware. You know? We were like, when can we say it? When can we say it? Because we want to have the metal.
You had the logo on there, though, and it caught my eye for sure. So I was impressed.
Yeah, but we've been submitting to a lot of competitions just to get feedback, throw it out there.
And sure. Always got to be helpful.
Yep. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Mm-hmm. People do love that Hazy, though.
Ah, they go nuts over it. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much my blood type at this point. I drink it after shifts.
I want to say last year I did two bus tours out to Old Nation last year. One of them was private, and that was fun, man. I'd go to kind of the home of the Hazy.
Sure.
And I've known him. I've known Travis for a bunch of years when he was still down here working for Detroit Brewing before he moved everything up to Williamston. I always want to say Williamsburg, but it's not Williamsburg. It's Williamston, right? So we're just working through. You guys brought a lot of different beers with you. Mm-hmm. You know, I got to drive and stuff, right? No, I'm just kidding. I'm all in.
Good.
I appreciate having them in cans like this, and it's like three of us sharing them.
Yeah.
Like sometimes I'll do this, and it'll be a one-on-one interview, and they'll show up, and it'll be like a – let me finish this first. It'll be like a holler. He'll have like three, four hollers. Yeah. I'm like, dude, you realize it's the two of us, and it's like 1 o'clock on a Wednesday, and like, I got shit to do later,
Well, doing the canning's been fun for us, and it's not like we have, a bottling or canning line. It's, we have a crawler machine, an October crawler machine that, we may on an off day, Tuesday or Wednesday, go back there and can maybe 100 cans, and it's always a rotating thing. It's good because, we have 10 beers on draft, but we have four in our canning list that you currently can't get on tap. So it's kind of a bottom of the barrel special when we have a keg left of, I know we've got some Pine Knob Pale that we did a Spruce Tips IPA.
Yeah, we've got some of our honey lagers still.
I wanted to bring the Imperial Stout, but apparently the keg was too far.
It didn't make
for
it
Joe
out
to
of
get. I gave him a hard time. I was like, no, we got to bring that one.
It's nice to drink some beers that aren't always, double digit.
Yeah.
So that I could drink a few of them, because that is what I'll get a lot. Well, I'll be on the air and be like, this is my aged in bourbon barrel for 20 year Imperial Stout. I'm like, okay.
15%
okay. Yeah, I go home after the show. My wife's like, how'd it go? I'm like, I got to go to bed.
Well, gearing into St. Patrick's Day, we had a list of 11, 10, and I think 12 and a half. We had to change that. We're like, let's rotate a little bit for St. Patrick's.
Yeah, it's going to make it kind of messy.
Yeah, well, that was our last beer pairing dinner. What we had, I think we had the Imperial, the barley wine, and then the double IPA, something along those lines. But the average ABV for that beer dinner, I believe, was like 10.
Your end of winter beer pairing.
But that makes sense. I kind of go in expecting that at that point. It's like going to the winter beer festival for the Guild in Grand Rapids. And I know I'm going to get a lot of heavy hitters going in on one of those.
Yeah, I'm definitely a seasonal drinker. So it's
I'm definitely making that shift. Yeah. Same here. I'm all in. I'm like trying to make sure I've drank through the majority of my heavier stuff that's at home. It's like, I don't know. It's like a formula trying to figure that out. Like, oh, man, I'm going to be out of town for a couple of weeks. I'm going to come back. It's going to be nice out, and I don't want to have any of that here. Then what I'll do is, this is occasionally if I have like a smart-ass customer, they'll figure it out. Like, I'll do a bus tour, And then I'll like have the first round on the bus for everybody. And it'll be like a hodgepodge of stuff that I bring on the bus, you know. And if a guy knows you up front, be like, dude, what's going on here? I'm like, I cleaned out my fridge right before we did all this. It's like, oh, you know, no one cares because they just want to grab a beer and they're all excited.
Yeah.
Like, it's not Bud Light, right? Like, it's all Michigan stuff typically. So how funny. Well, what a good episode. Wow. A lot of great beers, good stories here. We're very international, having a Australian Michigander. I don't know how.
You were
Michigander
in New Zealand, too. So, and Kiwi slash Kiwi fruit.
Ooh, that's a lot to say. I don't know. I don't know if I could say it that way. But how exciting. So, you know, if people want to get more information about Homegrown, how should they do it?
Obviously, the easy one is Facebook. And then we've got our website, which is homegrownbrewco.com. That can forward you on to all our social media profiles, et cetera. You can sign up for our email list. We do not bomb it a lot. Usually it's, you know, once a month updates. If you want to sign up for the Mug Club, you might get one extra updates, and that throws you towards all these kind of special invites.
We've got lots of cool events you have coming up.
We got a 2-year howler that we're releasing. So we turned 2 years old April 12th. So we're right around the corner to that. We'll be doing a birthday party. But yeah, if you check us out, just Google us.
Just Google us. You know what? I should always say that to people now. Just Google me.
That's always funny. You're like, what's your website?
Just get my name. Get my name right. You have a pretty easy name, I guess, in that respect. So it's easy. For me, they get my name wrong constantly. So it's always irritating me.
Sure. What's in your name?
And I try not to be too snippy about it. Like, can you adjust that article you wrote about my company where you said the name wrong? You know, but well, thank you for coming on. Thank you for bringing all these beers. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I want to thank my listeners. Next month, I'm going to have on Sean from Top Hops Hop Farm in Goodridge, Michigan. And if you want to learn more about the Beer Tour Guy show, you can go to betterondraft.com. You can check me out on Podcast Detroit. .com. You can check them out on my company's website, which is MotorCityBrewTours.com, plus all the other places that you listen to your podcast. I'm going to do something special at the end of this episode, and I'm going to play a promo for another very cool podcast, and hopefully I don't screw it up as I do this. If so, Seth, I'm sorry. I'm trying to be a better radio guy here, but I'm going to play a quick promo, and then I'm going to cut it after that. But listen up for my show next month. And listen to this promo and check out this other cool podcast. But I want to thank you guys again for coming on.
Yep, appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm totally not.
Hey there, my name is Seth Ressler.
Hi everyone, it's Becky Scarsello.
I am new to the Detroit area.
And I've been here my whole life.
So we started the podcast together. It's called The D Brief.
Detroit's Arts and Entertainment Podcast.
We cover concerts, comedy plays, food, drink, all kinds of stuff.
All the cool events around town, things to do, and the people that are doing them.
Can we talk about some of the people we've had as guests on this podcast?
Hey, this is Mark Kurlianchik, the restaurant critic for the Detroit Free Press.
Hi, I'm Ian DeLisi, and I host Essential Music on 101.9.
Hi, this is Mark Ridley of Mark Ridley's Comedy Cast.
Hey, this is Kate Williams, Executive Chef of Leading the House.
Hey, this is Meltdown from WRAF in Detroit.
This is Josh Malerman, author of Bird Box.
This is Carmen Harlan,
curator of Film at the Detroit Institute,
president and founder of Valentine Distilling Company.
The general manager of Innovation Experiences for the Henry Ford.
Arts and Entertainment editor at the Detroit Free Press.
The Michigan Science Center.
Arts Beats and News.
Public Theater.
Shakespeare in Detroit.
If you like going out to the city of Detroit, you're going to like this podcast.
The Debrief Podcast.
We like to say Detroit's moving.
Keep up.
We like to say Detroit's moving.
Keep up.
Your guide to Detroit's art and entertainment.
Your guide to Detroit's art and entertainment scene.
Okay, that was way more professional than I could ever do a promo, and that's why I had to cue it up like that. Also on the debrief occasionally is me. Occasionally I get to do a little guest host or they have me on there. So check out the debrief. Again, I want to thank the boys from Homegrown Brewing, and I want to thank you guys for listening to Beer Tour Guy Show episode whatever I said. I think it was said 22, right? So check me out next month, and peace. Enjoy your day.